This is the Cambridge Assessment International Education, Cambridge IGCSE, June 2020 examination in English as a Second Language. Paper 4. Listening. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers. And when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you are all ready, here is the exam. Exercise 1. You will hear 4 short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. What sport did the girl play on her first visit to the sports club? B. What does the girl think is the best thing about the sports club?
You joined a new sports club recently, didn't you? How was it?
Great. I went with a friend. We'd been thinking about playing badminton. The courts were fully booked, though. Fortunately, a tennis court was available, and so we did that instead. I lost the match, though.
Maybe I should join the club, too.
Absolutely. The cost of membership might put you off at first, but it's worth it. The staff are friendly and helpful, but you expect that in a sports club, don't you? And the facilities are more impressive than those I've seen in other clubs.
OK, I think I might join next week. You joined a new sports club recently, didn't you? How was it?
Great. I went with a friend. We'd been thinking about playing badminton. The courts were fully booked, though. Fortunately, a tennis court was available, and so we did that instead. I lost the match, though.
Maybe I should join the club, too.
Absolutely. The cost of membership might put you off at first, but it's worth it. The staff are friendly and helpful. But you expect that in a sports club, don't you? And the facilities are more impressive than those I've seen in other clubs.
OK, I think I might join next week.
Question 2. A. What type of book does the man usually read? B. What does the man particularly like about the book he has just read?
On today's book review programme, we're talking to Don Evans about the new books he'd like to recommend this month. So, Don, have you been reading detective stories again?
You know me too well. I do tend to go for that sort of book, and very occasionally a science fiction novel, if it's particularly imaginative. But I want to tell you about a historical novel I've just finished. The plot is very clever, though it's hard to follow sometimes. What stands out for me is the hero. Some of the minor characters are less believable, but I suppose they push the action along quite nicely.
On today's book review programme, we're talking to Don Evans about the new books he'd like to recommend this month. So, Don, have you been reading detective stories again?
You know me too well. I do tend to go for that sort of book, and very occasionally a science fiction novel, if it's particularly imaginative. But I want to tell you about a historical novel I've just finished. The plot is very clever, though it's hard to follow sometimes. What stands out for me is the hero. Some of the minor characters are less believable, but I suppose they push the action along quite nicely.
Question 3. A. Where is the new coffee shop? B. What pleased the woman about the new coffee shop?
Hi, Lucy. Where have you been?
I've just come back from meeting a friend. I usually go to the coffee shop near the station, especially in the mornings on my way to college. Anyway, there's another one just opened in the square, so we went there.
There are so many coffee shops these days. They all offer the same things, at least in my opinion. I hope the sandwiches were decent.
They weren't too bad, and the range of cakes was a bit predictable. What made up for that was the service. Customers will really appreciate it. I also think that in a coffee shop, background music is really important, but in this one it was slightly too loud.
Hi, Lucy. Where have you been?
I've just come back from meeting a friend. I usually go to the coffee shop near the station, especially in the mornings on my way to college. Anyway, there's another one just opened in the square, so we went there.
There are so many coffee shops these days. They all offer the same things, at least in my opinion. I hope the sandwiches were decent.
They weren't too bad, and the range of cakes was a bit predictable. What made up for that was the service. Customers will really appreciate it. I also think that in a coffee shop, background music is really important, but in this one it was slightly too loud.
Question 4. A. What is the name of the course the man decided to do at the college? B. What problem might the man have with the course?
So which course are you going to do at the college this year?
There's plenty to choose from. A friend's doing one called Local History, but I'm not keen on doing something that academic. I want to have a bit more fun. I was thinking of Everyday Spanish because it might be useful when I'm on holiday, but in the end I chose Drawing for Beginners.
That sounds great.
The length of each session might be a bit difficult for some students. They last 3 hours, but I'll be fine because there'll be a break. The main disadvantage for me could be the class size. It's such a popular subject.
So which course are you going to do at the college this year?
There's plenty to choose from. A friend's doing one called Local History, but I'm not keen on doing something that academic. I want to have a bit more fun. I was thinking of Everyday Spanish because it might be useful when I'm on holiday, but in the end I chose Drawing for Beginners.
That sounds great.
The length of each session might be a bit difficult for some students. They last 3 hours, but I'll be fine because there'll be a break. The main disadvantage for me could be the class size. It's such a popular subject.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear exercise 2. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 2. You will hear a talk given by a young man called Ed Lockwood, who took part in a musical talent show. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write 1 or 2 words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Hello. I'm going to tell you about a talent show I entered last summer. I'm sure you've seen these competitions on TV featuring young musicians from all over the country. The competition I took part in was just for bands in my local area, so my friends and I believed we had more of a chance than if it was open to people from a wider region or to bands based in a big city like London. Each band had to sing 2 songs, and both had to be original, their own songs and not just their versions of well-known songs. There was a panel of 6 judges, including a professional singer. The main judge, whose opinions really mattered, was a record producer. I remember another judge was a music teacher, and there was a famous dancer too. Everyone desperately wanted to win, of course. Often in competitions like this, the successful bands get recording contracts. It's what every musician wants. However, the organisers decided to reward the band that came out on top with cash. One of the competitors said the winners should get new guitars, which would have been quite nice, but that didn't happen. The competition attracted a lot of interest, so they needed somewhere with enough space. We're lucky that a concert hall has just been built in our town, so that was the obvious place. I think performing in a sports stadium would have been cool too, maybe some other time. And the old theatre, which has been used for similar events before, was closed for repairs, so was unavailable. When we first got together as a band, my friends and I preferred to do classic pop songs. Gradually, we felt much more comfortable doing rock music, and that's what we chose for the talent show after long discussion. One or two of the band members fancied having a go at heavy metal, but I thought that wouldn't work for us. The next challenge was writing a song. At first, I wanted a happy song about a party, but everyone else rejected the idea. I tried writing something about a great holiday I'd had a couple of years ago. I didn't get very far with that either. In the end, I came up with something about world peace. It has a nice message, so I think it was a good choice. When the big day came, some of the band members were a bit nervous. We'd never performed in front of such a big audience before. The lighting seemed too bright in the rehearsal, so we got that fixed, and I knew it would be fine on the night. But even as I stepped on the stage, I kept thinking about the sound equipment. Fortunately, everything went smoothly. We didn't win, though the judges said nice things about our performance and even gave us some advice. But what the competition did for us was boost our confidence hugely. We really needed that. I hoped I'd get some good ideas too, you know, inspiration for new songs, but that came a few months later. Anyway, the whole thing was great.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Hello. I'm going to tell you about a talent show I entered last summer. I'm sure you've seen these competitions on TV featuring young musicians from all over the country. The competition I took part in was just for bands in my local area, so my friends and I believed we had more of a chance than if it was open to people from a wider region or to bands based in a big city like London. Each band had to sing two songs, and both had to be original. Their own songs, and not just their versions of well-known songs. There was a panel of six judges, including a professional singer. The main judge, whose opinions really mattered, was a record producer. I remember another judge was a music teacher, and there was a famous dancer too. Everyone desperately wanted to win, of course. Often in competitions like this, the successful bands get recording contracts. It's what every musician wants. However, the organisers decided to reward the band that came out on top with cash. One of the competitors said the winners should get new guitars, which would have been quite nice, but that didn't happen. The competition attracted a lot of interest, so they needed somewhere with enough space. We're lucky that a concert hall has just been built in our town, so that was the obvious place. I think performing in a sports stadium would have been cool too, maybe some other time. And the old theatre, which has been used for similar events before, was closed for repairs, so was unavailable. When we first got together as a band, my friends and I preferred to do classic pop songs. Gradually, we felt much more comfortable doing rock music, and that's what we chose for the talent show after long discussion. One or two of the band members fancied having a go at heavy metal, but I thought that wouldn't work for us. The next challenge was writing a song. At first, I wanted a happy song about a party, but everyone else rejected the idea. I tried writing something about a great holiday I'd had a couple of years ago. I didn't get very far with that either. In the end, I came up with something about world peace. It has a nice message, so I think it was a good choice. When the big day came, some of the band members were a bit nervous. We'd never performed in front of such a big audience before. The lighting seemed too bright in the rehearsal, so we got that fixed, and I knew it would be fine on the night. But even as I stepped on the stage, I kept thinking about the sound equipment. Fortunately, everything went smoothly. We didn't win, though the judges said nice things about our performance and even gave us some advice. But what the competition did for us was boost our confidence hugely. We really needed that. I hoped I'd get some good ideas too, you know, inspiration for new songs, but that came a few months later. Anyway, the whole thing was great.
That is the end of the talk. In a moment, you will hear exercise 3. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 3. You will hear 6 students talking about part-time jobs they have done. For each of speakers 1 to 6, choose from the list A to G which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the appropriate box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. You will hear the recordings twice. Speaker 1.
Last summer, I worked as a waiter in a busy restaurant for 6 weeks. I thought it would be exhausting because I'd be on my feet all day, but I seemed to find the energy from somewhere. Although the customers were usually quite friendly, and I often had some nice chats with them, it still wasn't exactly a fun job, to be honest. When I was in the kitchen, though, the chef taught me how to prepare some basic dishes, and I picked up quite a lot of tips from him.
Speaker 2.
I worked in a factory and realised before starting that the chances of having fun weren't that great. The supervisor gave me several different tasks to do. I struggled though, and he had to repeat his explanations and instructions several times, and spent his valuable time assisting me. As for gaining loads of new skills, it didn't really happen. Most of my colleagues were older than me, and they usually ignored me. Which was a pity because one of the reasons I got a summer job was to make new friends.
Speaker 3.
I worked in my uncle's car wash business for several weeks. It was a fairly simple job, so he didn't need to look after me and give me a hand. The first day or two was easy because it was fairly quiet, but after that, things changed. Sometimes we couldn't even take a proper break, and so I was worn out by the end of the day. I think I could have had a good relationship with the other guys there, but I rarely had a chance to talk to them.
Speaker 4.
I worked in a bookshop during my holidays. I hoped I'd pick up some practical skills or just learn about books, but my employer, who was very nice, wasn't there most of the time and just left me in charge. I thought this might happen because I knew the shop didn't get many customers. Because of that, it just wasn't a challenging job at all. I used to fall asleep at the desk sometimes. It's a pity I didn't enjoy the whole experience more.
Speaker 5.
I worked in a supermarket during my holidays. The boss seemed to like me and showed that he really trusted me by getting me to train other students when they started work there. I didn't expect that, but it was okay, though some of my new colleagues were looking at me and probably saying to themselves, "Who do you think you are?" I wanted to be friends, really, and not tell them what to do. But having this role did make me realise how much support all the other new staff needed.
Speaker 6.
I used to deliver leaflets to homes in my area. I thought I was unfit and might go home feeling exhausted. In fact, I was fine because I often had a little rest if I needed one. Although it was a challenge to deliver hundreds of leaflets every day, to my surprise, I found that I really appreciated having time to myself, and I often listened to music. I think students should do jobs where they can learn things that might be useful in the future. What I learned was to enjoy my own company.
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
Last summer, I worked as a waiter in a busy restaurant for 6 weeks. I thought it would be exhausting because I'd be on my feet all day, but I seemed to find the energy from somewhere. Although the customers were usually quite friendly and I often had some nice chats with them, it still wasn't exactly a fun job, to be honest. When I was in the kitchen, though, the chef taught me how to prepare some basic dishes, and I picked up quite a lot of tips from him.
Speaker 2.
I worked in a factory and realised before starting that the chances of having fun weren't that great. The supervisor gave me several different tasks to do. I struggled, though, and he had to repeat his explanations and instructions several times and spent his valuable time assisting me. As for gaining loads of new skills, it didn't really happen. Most of my colleagues were older than me and they usually ignored me, which was a pity because one of the reasons I got a summer job was to make new friends.
Speaker 3.
I worked in my uncle's car wash business for several weeks. It was a fairly simple job, so he didn't need to look after me and give me a hand. The first day or two was easy because it was fairly quiet, but after that, things changed. Sometimes we couldn't even take a proper break, and so I was worn out by the end of the day. I think I could have had a good relationship with the other guys there, but I rarely had a chance to talk to them.
Speaker 4.
I worked in a bookshop during my holidays. I hoped I'd pick up some practical skills or just learn about books, but my employer, who was very nice, wasn't there most of the time and just left me in charge. I thought this might happen because I knew the shop didn't get many customers. Because of that, it just wasn't a challenging job at all. I used to fall asleep at the desk sometimes. It's a pity I didn't enjoy the whole experience more.
Speaker 5.
I worked in a supermarket during my holidays. The boss seemed to like me and showed that he really trusted me by getting me to train other students when they started work there. I didn't expect that, but it was okay, though some of my new colleagues were looking at me and probably saying to themselves, "Who do you think you are?" I wanted to be friends, really, and not tell them what to do. But having this role did make me realise how much support all the other new staff needed.
Speaker 6.
I used to deliver leaflets to homes in my area. I thought I was unfit and might go home feeling exhausted. In fact, I was fine because I often had a little rest if I needed one.
Although it was a challenge to deliver hundreds of leaflets every day, to my surprise, I found that I really appreciated having time to myself, and I often listened to music. I think students should do jobs where they can learn things that might be useful in the future. What I learned was to enjoy my own company.
That is the end of exercise 3. In a moment, you will hear exercise 4. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 4. You will hear an interview with a travel blogger called Martin Bailey. Listen to the interview and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
Hi, Martin. Thanks for coming in today to tell us about being a travel blogger. Basically, you travel around the world, then write about your experiences in a blog that's read by thousands of people online.
That's right.
So what made you decide to start a travel blog?
I had two uncles who were pilots, and they flew everywhere, though I don't think they influenced me much. I certainly didn't travel a lot when I was younger, but I dreamt of living in another country. It seemed like an exciting idea. The honest truth is that I thought, like many people, that describing and reflecting on my holidays wouldn't require much effort, but I was totally wrong about that, of course.
When you started the blog, you didn't have a good job. How did you pay for your trips?
Well, I'd read about some travellers covering the cost by getting temporary jobs wherever they went, and I'm sure that suits some people, but it didn't appeal much to me. At home, my aim was to live a life without luxuries and save money so that I could travel. For example, I decided not to have a car. I was also convinced that taking out a bank loan wouldn't be the right thing to do.
How do you choose each new destination?
Despite all the exciting travel programs on TV, which give some people great ideas, I prefer to think for myself. I take into account whether somewhere already attracts large numbers of visitors. I prefer going to places that are visited less frequently, ones that are tricky to get to, or just not well known. I read travel books sometimes. Generally, though, they're not the source of my inspiration.
So let's imagine you've decided on a place. Do you do lots of research before you go?
It goes without saying that I have to check basic information like accommodation and transport. I mostly use travel agencies that specialise in particular destinations, but I like travelling to a new place with an open mind, so I don't bother looking at comments made by other bloggers. I don't want to be influenced by them.
When you travel, what sort of hotels do you stay in?
Well, it depends. Sometimes I keep an eye on the budget and deliberately look for fairly basic accommodation. Most of my readers probably do something similar. Other times, I make sure I take the opposite approach and aim to be really comfortable. I'm sure people enjoy reading about different ways of doing things.
I'm surprised you like travelling on your own. Why do you do that?
Oh, of course it would be fun to have someone by my side to share my experiences with and to talk about what I can see and what I'm feeling. But it's not essential because I can express all my opinions in my blog anyway. I've noticed that friendly individuals often approach me and want to chat, and I can't say I don't find that enjoyable.
Do you ever get things wrong when you're on a trip?
Well, I worry about losing my way sometimes. I've got a terrible sense of direction, but these days technology means this is rarely an issue. The main problem is that I often rush around the main historic monuments, trying to see as much as I possibly can in a short time. A slower pace might be better. It's because I want my blog to cover everything, which is impossible, of course.
And finally, What would you say to someone thinking about starting a travel blog?
Ah, there's so much advice I could give. But basically, I'd recommend doing a course on blogging or even journalism. That'll make you stand out from a lot of the competition. Having an attractive website is obviously important, one with striking images. But is it the key to success? I doubt it. Posting new articles regularly is good, but I'd go for quality, not quantity.
Martin, thanks very much for talking to me today.
Now you will hear the interview again.
Hi, Martin. Thanks for coming in today to tell us about being a travel blogger. Basically, you travel around the world, then write about your experiences in a blog that's read by thousands of people online.
That's right.
So what made you decide to start a travel blog?
I had two uncles who were pilots, and they flew everywhere, though I don't think they influenced me much. I certainly didn't travel a lot when I was younger, but I dreamt of living in another country. It seemed like an exciting idea. The honest truth is that I thought, like many people, that describing and reflecting on my holidays wouldn't require much effort, but I was totally wrong about that, of course.
When you started the blog, you didn't have a good job. How did you pay for your trips?
Well, I'd read about some travellers covering the cost by getting temporary jobs wherever they went, and I'm sure that suits some people, but it didn't appeal much to me. At home, my aim was to live a life without luxuries and save money so that I could travel. For example, I decided not to have a car. I was also convinced that taking out a bank loan wouldn't be the right thing to do.
How do you choose each new destination?
Despite all the exciting travel programs on TV, which give some people great ideas, I prefer to think for myself. I take into account whether somewhere already attracts large numbers of visitors. I prefer going to places that are visited less frequently, ones that are tricky to get to or just not well known. I read travel books sometimes. Generally, though, they're not the source of my inspiration.
So let's imagine you've decided on a place. Do you do lots of research before you go?
It goes without saying that I have to check basic information like accommodation and transport. I mostly use travel agencies that specialise in particular destinations. But I like travelling to a new place with an open mind, so I don't bother looking at comments made by other bloggers. I don't want to be influenced by them.
When you travel, what sort of hotels do you stay in?
Well, it depends. Sometimes I keep an eye on the budget and deliberately look for fairly basic accommodation. Most of my readers probably do something similar. Other times, I make sure I take the opposite approach and aim to be really comfortable. I'm sure people enjoy reading about different ways of doing things.
I'm surprised you like travelling on your own. Why do you do that?
Oh, of course it would be fun to have someone by my side to share my experiences with and to talk about what I can see and what I'm feeling. But it's not essential because I can express all my opinions in my blog anyway. I've noticed that friendly individuals often approach me and want to chat, and I can't say I don't find that enjoyable.
Do you ever get things wrong when you're on a trip?
Well, I worry about losing my way sometimes. I've got a terrible sense of direction, but these days technology means this is rarely an issue. The main problem is that I often rush around the main historic monuments, trying to see as much as I possibly can in a short time. A slower pace might be better. It's because I want my blog to cover everything, which is impossible, of course.
And finally, what would you say to someone thinking about starting a travel blog?
There's so much advice I could give. But basically, I'd recommend doing a course on blogging or even journalism. That'll make you stand out from a lot of the competition. Having an attractive website is obviously important, one with striking images. But is it the key to success? I doubt it. Posting new articles regularly is good, but I'd go for quality, not quantity.
Martin, thanks very much for talking to me today.
That is the end of the interview. In a moment, you will hear exercise 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Exercise 5. Part A. You will hear a teacher giving a talk about forests. Listen to the talk and complete the sentences in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
About 30% of the Earth's land surface is covered in forests, containing approximately 3 trillion trees. There are several types of forest. Northern forests can be found in the far north of Europe, Asia, and North America, where the summers are short and cool and there's plenty of rain. What struck me during my first visit to this type of forest, though, was the darkness you find there. Being in a forest in warmer regions is quite a different experience because of the feeling of space. The trees grow further apart there. Then there are rainforests, which are often subdivided into different types, including the lowland rainforests in areas around the equator, and rainforests, which are located on mountain slopes. There are also mangrove forests, which have distinctive long tree roots. These are typically situated on tropical coasts, and they bear a strong resemblance to muddy swamps. If we examine a tropical rainforest, we find distinct layers. There may be a few trees that grow to heights of 60 meters, but the majority will be around 30 to 40 meters, and collectively, these treetops form what resembles a large umbrella over the rest of the forest. Experts, such as botanists, refer to it as a canopy. Most wildlife lives in this upper layer of the forest, and the layer beneath this consists of smaller, younger trees. It's well known that, due to their biodiversity, many rare animals and a range of exotic birds can be found in rainforests. Plants of all shapes and sizes can also be seen, the uses of which many of you will probably be familiar with. These include the manufacture of perfume. When I was doing my research, the remarkable number of leaves, flowers, and roots that are of importance to modern medicine was something I hadn't anticipated. You might not realize that chewing gum contains extracts from rainforest plants. This was something I'd heard about before. Clearly, the importance of protecting these unique habitats cannot be denied. Unfortunately, deforestation, which is the destruction of forest areas, is a major global problem, even if recently the trend has been partly reversed. Illegal logging has obviously done considerable damage, often leading to flooding. Air pollution is another threat, though what many of us fail to recognize is that population growth can mean that trees need to be cut down. However, it's fair to point out that not all the damage to rainforests is caused by humans.
Now you will hear the talk again.
About 30% of the Earth's land surface is covered in forests, containing approximately 3 trillion trees. There are several types of forest. Northern forests can be found in the far north of Europe, Asia, and North America, where the summers are short and cool and there's plenty of rain. What struck me during my first visit to this type of forest, though, was the darkness you find there. Being in a forest in warmer regions is quite a different experience because of the feeling of space. The trees grow further apart there. Then there are rainforests, which are often subdivided into different types, including the lowland rainforests in areas around the equator, and rainforests, which are located on mountain slopes. There are also mangrove forests, which have distinctive long tree roots. These are typically situated on tropical coasts, and they bear a strong resemblance to muddy swamps. If we examine a tropical rainforest, we find distinct layers. There may be a few trees that grow to heights of 60 meters, but the majority will be around 30 to 40 meters, and collectively, these treetops form what resembles a large umbrella over the rest of the forest. Experts, such as botanists, refer to it as a canopy. Most wildlife lives in this upper layer of the forest, and the layer beneath this consists of smaller, younger trees. It's well known that, due to their biodiversity, many rare animals and a range of exotic birds can be found in rainforests. Plants of all shapes and sizes can also be seen, the uses of which many of you will probably be familiar with. These include the manufacture of perfume. When I was doing my research, the remarkable number of leaves, flowers, and roots that are of importance to modern medicine was something I hadn't anticipated. You might not realize that chewing gum contains extracts from rainforest plants. This was something I'd heard about before. Clearly, the importance of protecting these unique habitats cannot be denied. Unfortunately, deforestation, which is the destruction of forest areas, is a major global problem, even if recently the trend has been partly reversed. Illegal logging has obviously done considerable damage, often leading to flooding. Air pollution is another threat, though what many of us fail to recognize is that population growth can mean that trees need to be cut down. However, it's fair to point out that not all the damage to rainforests is caused by humans.
Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two college students about planting trees and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
So, are you ready for the college's tree planting day tomorrow?
Yes. My group have already been out to check that the field behind the college is suitable. I thought I'd be putting a stick in the ground to indicate where the tree will go, but I was told to use spray paint. It makes it obvious where to start digging, I suppose. We can hardly put up a sign. That would be quite a lot of work.
Your group were lucky. We had real problems finding a suitable place for our tree. We're planting our tree on the other side of town, and the place we ended up choosing has lots of stones in the soil, so it's going to be hard work digging a hole. But the first place we looked at would have been impossible due to the quantity of broken bricks we came across in the earth there. At least old tree roots weren't a problem.
We've been told that protecting the young trees is very important too. We looked into a variety of ways to do this. The most obvious is to use plastic guards which are wrapped around the trunk of the tree to protect it. You remove them when the tree's about 3 metres tall. In some places, small fences are more appropriate because they keep animals and people away, so that's what we're going for.
When we looked online to choose our tree, I was surprised by how many different types there are.
Yes, me too. We thought that some of the American trees were interesting, and there was a Mediterranean one which was very attractive. But my group were keen to select a native species because we've been studying the landscapes and the typical trees you can find here.
I was amazed to read that more than 90% of the UK's ancient forests were lost a long time ago.
Yes, and the wildlife in the remaining English forests is under threat. Still, there are organisations working to improve the situation.
I'm quite interested in forest wildlife, such as deer, though some creatures in a woodland habitat, like snakes, don't appeal to me quite as much. I feel something similar about bats, which you rarely see anyway, though I've heard that organisations exist to help preserve them. I reckon it's time to do something for butterflies, though. I'm going to join an organisation working to help them as soon as I can.
That sounds like a very good idea.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
So, are you ready for the college's tree planting day tomorrow?
Yes, my group have already been out to check that the field behind the college is suitable. I thought I'd be putting a stick in the ground to indicate where the tree will go, but I was told to use spray paint. It makes it obvious where to start digging, I suppose. We can hardly put up a sign. That would be quite a lot of work.
Your group were lucky. We had real problems finding a suitable place for our tree. We're planting our tree on the other side of town, and the place we ended up choosing has lots of stones in the soil, so it's going to be hard work digging a hole. But the first place we looked at would have been impossible due to the quantity of broken bricks we came across in the earth there. At least old tree roots weren't a problem.
We've been told that protecting the young trees is very important too. We looked into a variety of ways to do this. The most obvious is to use plastic guards which are wrapped around the trunk of the tree to protect it. You remove them when the tree's about 3 metres tall. In some places, small fences are more appropriate because they keep animals and people away, so that's what we're going for.
When we looked online to choose our tree, I was surprised by how many different types there are.
Yes, me too. We thought that some of the American trees were interesting, and there was a Mediterranean one which was very attractive. But my group were keen to select a native species because we've been studying the landscapes and the typical trees you can find here.
I was amazed to read that more than 90% of the UK's ancient forests were lost a long time ago.
Yes, and the wildlife in the remaining English forests is under threat. Still, there are organisations working to improve the situation.
I'm quite interested in forest wildlife, such as deer, though some creatures in a woodland habitat, like snakes, don't appeal to me quite as much. I feel something similar about bats, which you rarely see anyway, though I've heard that organisations exist to help preserve them. I reckon it's time to do something for butterflies, though. I'm going to join an organisation working to help them as soon as I can.
That sounds like a very good idea.
That is the end of Exercise 5, and of the exam. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number, and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.